Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Wildlife Outdoor Podcast. My name is Jose, and I'm the co-host to Russell Reynolds. And thank you for joining us again today. For this episode, we're just going to be kind of recapping our adventures for the National Great Outdoor Month, which took place from, the entire month of July.
June.
Sorry, my apologies. Month of June. Hey, man, it's been a day, okay? Coming some slack. But actually, it's been a week.
Really?
Well, yeah, it's only Tuesday, so.
I feel that.
So we're going to just talk a little bit about what we did to partake in National Great Outdoor Month. So you want to kick off, Russell?
Yes, sir. I definitely can. I did, a decent amount of traveling. Went to Florida. Talked about that last episode or the episode before. Been to a few state parks. Went to Devil's Den State Park. I went to Camp Helen State Park in Florida. I went to Hot Springs National Park, which is where I live, but also went camping out there at a KOA site. Went hiking Goat Rock over at Gulf of Gorge, which is within the National Forest, I believe. Went around a bunch of random different places throughout Arkansas and Florida. Finally got out on the water and did a decent amount of fishing. This past weekend, I took Ruth's cousin, CJ, out fishing. And for his graduation gift, I got him a guided trip for smallmouth. And he had mentioned about wanting to learn how to fly fish, but never has. And so I decided to take him out on some creeks over here and see if he wanted to get on the fly rod, which he did. So I took some pictures and videos of him using my 6-weight Axiom 2X TFO rod, and he picked it up pretty quick. So I'm not worried about him on the raft and in the slightest being able to make a cast and hopefully get on some small jaws. So that was this past week, and that was pretty exciting. And unfortunately, the creek that we went to, excuse me, sorry, I'm getting over some type of sickness. I don't know. I'm having to cough off the microphone and stuff. So y'all can probably hear it in my voice, but I apologize in advance for any coughs, sneezes, throat clearing, or anything like that that's going to happen. But and so we went out on a body of water here in Hot Springs that it was a creek, and the fishing just was not that great. I caught maybe 6-7 little pumpkin seeds, long ears, and green sunfish. I had to go all the way down to a size 20 ant little fly. Jeez. And that's what I was catching them on. And he was using, cause I had the 2-weight out there, and it would have just been so hard for him to learn on such a light rod. So I had my 2X out there hoping I can get him on, some decent, green sunfish or maybe some largemouth spotted bass, but we didn't really see any, and everything that we saw was basically bedded up. We saw probably 15-20 beds of long ears and bass, and of course I didn't want to cast at those. And there was a couple times that we would casting to a different direction whenever I'd bring it up and it'd pass a bed that they would just kind of chase at it, but nothing was biting. So I think they were still bedded up, which to me was kind of strange because it's a little late for that, in my opinion. Normally that's a spring thing, and we're already, a couple weeks into summer, and it was different for me. But that they were still on beds, so we didn't really have the best luck, but it was pretty good. But he did land a little green sunfish at Lake Hamilton on the 2-weight, and he got so excited. He's like, dude, I love how much you can feel the fish on this. So I'm excited to get him out there on the raft and hopefully get him on some smallies.
When's his trip?
I believe we're going to go July 15th, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to take a half day. So it's going to be good, hopefully. Hopefully the weather permits and things aren't blown out. And it seems like that's my luck. But I'm hoping it all goes as planned because he lives a few hours away. So it's kind of trying to get him over here and make sure the guide is available. And it has to be on a Saturday. It's kind of a lot of things have to fall together in the right spot and right timing to make it work. So I'm hoping that's the case, but I guess we'll see when we get closer because we've been having some crazy storms here. It's been an extremely wet spring and so far an extremely wet summer. I mean, just storming like crazy.
Yeah, the weather's been gnarly, man. We've been here in Texas. We've been going through a little bit of a heat wave a little bit. It freaking sucks. We were out there in the field last week. It was like 105 degrees. It was not fun. Terrible.
Yeah, we've been having straight line winds like crazy. I mean, today it was 101 degrees, 90% chance of thunderstorms. Like, wow. What? Why both?
Well, hopefully the weather holds for his trip, man. That's a sick graduation present. If I ever finish college, I'm about to drop some clues to my parents, you know, guide a trip.
Right.
Florida would be pretty nice. I'm just kidding. But
right.
No, that's awesome, man. Hopefully those lessons pay off and you catch them a big old smallie.
I hope so, man.
That's awesome, dude.
So what about you? What have you been up to in National Great Outdoors Month?
Man, I haven't had the opportunity to really get out and do as many outdoor things as I'd like. Just because like where I'm at, there aren't really a lot of state parks, for one. There's some like local nature parks, I guess you could say. And I've gone there to go hiking or went to a local one to go birding. That was kind of fun. And then that's really it. The only things I've been able to do, which actually I'm really thankful for. So my field sites are on the western edge of the Edwards Plateau. So we've been staying in Junction, Texas, which is where the South Llano State Park is. And so I've been fortunate in that the most recent trip, the two trips before this weekend, we were able to carve out like 2 or 3 hours in the evening to go and mess around at the park. So that's been fun. I went fishing and I explored a different reach that I hadn't before. And it was awesome, man. Like the water was flowing really good. It was clear. It was cool. I mean, it was beautiful. And the fishing was pretty awesome. Caught a good variety. I think over 2 days, my species list, or actually two trips, my species list is probably about 8, I think.
Oh, wow.
8 different species, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, that I caught just from like 2-3 hours each trip. Which has been pretty awesome. Caught my first Rios of the year. Caught my first Guadalupe bass of the year. Caught my first catfish of the year. So it was a good trip, man. The sunsets were gorgeous, dude. I mean, I don't know what it is about West Texas, but those sunsets are something else, dude. It's like someone took some watercolors to the sky. It's just unreal. That's awesome. I tried to get some photos. I didn't have my camera with me, so I just used my phone, and it doesn't even do it justice, but it was just beautiful. The South Llano River, I can't recommend it enough. So far, it's been my favorite park that I've visited. I have a goal to visit every state park in Texas just in my lifetime. It's something I want to do. I also want to try and visit every national park, and we actually have one.
Big Bend.
Yes, it was escaping me. Big Bend National Park.
Don't want to go so bad,
dude. I know, me too. But maybe not right now. It's hot as balls. So
right. Yeah, we don't need another like we did in Fredericksburg at Enchanted Rock.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Too damn hot.
That day was a fun trip, but it was brutal. It was
right.
And yeah, we don't need a repeat of that. So I think I'm probably going to try and wait till either the fall or the spring. Actually, I think I'd like to go in the spring whenever the wildflowers start blooming. But so that's for a future trip. But so yeah, I haven't been able to do that or do that as much outdoor stuff. Well, I guess the nature of my research has me outdoors a lot. But more for research purposes. But it's still like, I still try to make it fun. So, and kind of make it like a little nature walk, if you will. So we'll go and we'll try and ID plants. We'll keep an eye out for any kind of wildlife. We found a little rattlesnake by the water trough. I named it Ratliff. I try to keep it a secret because I don't want the cowboys to kill it. So she's been there for a little bit now. I haven't seen her lately, so hopefully she's still doing okay. It's been busy. Oh, and I always try and bring my binoculars too and do a bit of birding while I'm out there, which, I mean, it's kind of like research because that'll help me for my own project. So it's not like it's fun, but it's also practical for me at this point in my life. Right. But yeah, so just because I've been traveling to the field a lot and weather's been kind of crazy too. Just haven't had a lot of chances to go and spend as much time outdoors as I would have liked. I did go carp fishing that one time, which I mentioned in the previous episode. That was nice, unsuccessful, but it was a lot of fun. And I want to go back, and I'm actually almost done building my first fly rod, and I'm purposely building it as a carp stick. So hopefully I can go back there and test it. It should be done. If all goes well, my rod should be done by Thursday. So by the time this episode airs, it should be finished. I'm pretty freaking stoked, man. It's been a long time coming.
So what specifically makes it a carp stick?
Just like the intention behind it. So I built it on a Pelagos glass blank. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the blank is a 6'7" weight blank. Mm-hmm. And I like glass, and a lot of carp fishermen use glass rods because they have, especially like in the higher weights, like 6 and up, they have some pull, they have some strength to them. Like they have that power that you need for handling big fish like carp and stuff like that. But because it's a glass rod, they're a bit more delicate in the tip and can land the fly a little bit softer than a traditional graphite rod can, which lends itself pretty well to carp fishing. Sometimes you want that softer presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's just, man, there's just something about glass. It's just so much fun to fish. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I have a lot of graphite rods and I love graphite rods, but to me, glass just holds a soft spot in my heart. And I knew that when I wanted to build this rod, if I wanted to build a rod specifically for carp, I wanted it on a glass blank. So I got that blank. I put a fighting butt on there just so I can have a little extra leverage if I hook into a bigger fish. And I put some stainless steel components on there because I also want to try and take it to the coast at some point and catch a redfish on it. So it's a multi-purpose built rod, but I truly built it mainly to be my carp and stick. It's a little bit shorter. So when I'm like around brush and stuff like that, don't get me wrong. Like I have rods right now that I could use for carp fishing, like a 6 weight, the koi fish I caught with you was on a 6 weight.
Yeah.
I have, some 8 weights, but again, I just wanted a glass rod. This is like a 6'7". So I wanted a stronger glass rod that can handle fish of that size, or a fish that can potentially be pretty sizable. But still have like a really like soft tip. And again, because it's shorter, and sometimes I'm walking through brush or whatever, having a short rod can be advantageous. And then glass rods roll cast really, really well. So sometimes, you know, maybe I'm not able to get a full on back cast because there's like a wall of vegetation behind me or whatever the case may be. I mean, glass rods can really, really lay out a really pretty roll cast, in my opinion.
I see.
Like comparing the two, I find that I roll cast much better with glass rods than I do graphite rods. For the most part, I do have a TFO Finesse, which is like a moderate action graphite rod. That thing can roll cast pretty well too. But glass rods, they're just awesome. So I'm really excited to try and test it out, man. That's kind of the nice thing about building a rod is you can make it your own. So I didn't have to put a fighting butt on there, but I wanted to, just like I said, so I could have the extra leverage. Mm-hmm. I put a, even though it's a 6-weight, I think full Wells grips are getting more popular now because I've seen them on a lot of rods, even like 5-weights. But I wanted a full Wells grip, something with a little bit bigger profile, just because it's more comfortable. Well, I just like full Wells grips. I like having a bit more, I guess, substance in my grips, mm-hmm. like Fenwick style grips. I used to have a Fenwick glass 3-weight, and they weren't like the reverse half Wells or cigar style grip, but they had it was almost like a modified full Wells, if you will. And it was awesome. It was super comfy. I love that grip a lot. And so I wanted to put a full Wells grip on this. So that's kind of the nice thing about being able to build your rod. You have more control over your components and you can truly make it how you want it. So yeah, man, I'm pretty excited to get it on the water. Gonna apply the last coat tomorrow around 2 p.m. And then by Thursday, around the same time, it should be finished, but I'll probably give it 48 hours before I start, you know, test casting it and everything.
Nice. So you're just on the epoxy step of it now?
Yeah. So I had to do it in stages, because of where I live current or my living situation currently. I am renting a house with two other people. So I don't have a lot of space to work with, you know. We don't have like a garage or anything like that. I was able to fit the real seat assembly, the grips, all that stuff. I was able to wrap the guides and everything. That was not a problem. The epoxy part, I was trying to figure out how to best go about it, because this rod, I think, like I said, I think it's a 7'11", if I'm not mistaken, but it's a 3-piece rod. So it's a little, if it was a 4-piece rod, I could probably just do it like in steps, you know, without wasting too much epoxy. Mm-hmm. But I figured for this one, and also I'm kind of impatient at this point. Like I just wanted to get over with. So I just opted to go ahead and try and do it all at one go, which I found both cons and pros to that approach. And this is my first solo build. I built my first fishing rod in high school, which was, oh man, I think when I did it was probably
13 years ago.
Yeah, they're about 13 years ago. So
was it Mr. Land's class?
Yes. Yeah, I built that rod for my grandpa, and it was a bait casting rod, 7-footer. So it's more or less the same process, but there are a few more things that you have to take in consideration with the fly rod, I guess. So this is my first fly rod build, my first solo build. All that being said, I did ask for some advice from a buddy of mine, Chris, who you might have seen on Instagram as Ditch Fishing Flies. He built his rod. He built a rod. I mean, I don't remember when I last saw it, a couple months ago, but I know he built a rod, and is actually, that was one of the inspirations for me trying to get back into building my own. And so he's, you know, I reached out to him for some advice for a couple things. So I can't say it was truly solo, but as far as doing like all of the work, physical work, like that was, this is my first build. So I learned a lot. I would love to continue doing it in the future, but I'm going to have to figure out the space part. I don't know how I'm going to do that. If right now I'm able to do it because both of my roommates are out of town. So I'm able to kind of like spread out a little bit. So I have a folding table in the living room right now that the drying motors are resting on. So I was able just to put it out there and do all the wraps at once. So
I see.
Yeah. So that's the only reason. And they're coming back, I think, Saturday. So I wanted to make sure that it was done before then. So that way I don't have to worry about being in anybody's way and all that stuff. So, so that would, that's the only inconvenience real inconvenience I've run into trying to build my own rod is the issue of space. If you have like a shed or a garage or something like that, or like a spare bedroom or whatever, it's probably not as big of a deal. But for me, in my current situation, it kind of is. And So in the future, I don't know. I'll probably try and stick with four-piece rods because I just think it'll, conceptually anyway, it should be a little bit easier to deal with than like a three-piece. I could have done like two pieces and then done one separate, but I feel like that would just, it would just take longer. And again, like at this point, I am kind of impatient. It's been sitting in the corner wrapped. Like it's been wrapped, everything, the guides, everything has been wrapped for a month. So for a month, it's just been sitting in the corner waiting to be epoxied. And I just now had the opportunity to do it. So realistically, this could have been done a month ago. But yeah, man. So it's just been a really long process. It's been fun. It's been really frustrating at times. Like I thought time flies could be frustrating. This, I think, has been the most frustrating process for me by far when it comes to fishing or fishing related things.
I see.
But it's also been a really fun process. And I think once I catch my first fish on it, I mean, all the frustration is not even going to matter. It'll be just, you know, it'll be well worth it. It's just right now, I'm just over it. I'm just ready for it to be done.
Hell, after the first cast, it'll probably be worth it. Lay out a perfect cast. You'll be like, yep, I built that.
Dude, because I've seen that those Pelagos rods, I've been seeing them around for a while now. I follow the guy. I've been following him for a bit. And he turns out some freaking gorgeous rods, dude. I think the Fly Trap sells them also, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, his glass rods are so beautiful. I love the color schemes that he does. I love the cork work that he does. I mean, it's just the work is awesome. I'm by no means anywhere near what this guy is capable of doing. However, I've wanted to try and cast one of those glass rods or fish one of those glass rods, but I can't afford one of those glass rods, you know. But I noticed that the blank was only $80.
Oh, and wow.
So I was like, dude, so for $80, I mean, yeah, sure, it's not going to be the quality of a Pelagos rod, but I could, in essence, have the blank and then I could just do everything else.
Right.
So, and that to me is the most important thing. Cosmetically, yeah, like there's a lot of room for improvement for sure. But as long as it fishes well, I mean, that's all that matters to me. That being said, you know, in the future, I would love to buy a Pelagos rod from the man himself. You know, it's just or C. Barclay. His glass rods are friggin' amazing too, but also a pretty penny.
Right.
There's something to be said about custom rods from custom rod makers. Like, there's a reason. There's a premium aside from the components and stuff. Just the craftsmanship is on another level. Like your No Leaf Clover net, for example. That thing,
right,
is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous, dude. Isn't it?
Gorgeous, bro. One of the prettiest nets I've ever seen. And so, yeah, I mean, I could build a rod. It's not going to be anywhere near as pretty or as nice, but still, man, I mean, it's probably the most affordable way that I could get as close to getting a Pelagos rod as I could.
Right.
For a fraction of the price. I think I'm in this build, like none of the tools and anything, just straight components, maybe $160.
Oh, wow. It's not bad at all.
Something like that. 160, 180, something. I can't remember. Yeah, not bad at all. And I wound up with some extra guides because I ordered the wrong size. I have an extra grip because I fudged up the first one. So I'm just going to save that for a future build if I ever decide to do a future build. And so I've got a few extra components for another rod build if I wanted to, or two, I guess, technically, because the rod, the guide size would be wrong for that, for the grip, like how big I bored it out. But sorry, for the rod, you know, like the rod that the grip would fit on would be too big for the guys to really fit on. So
I see.
Yeah. So I guess I have components for two different builds, but anyways, but yeah, man, so it's been a process. I'm just really, really friggin' stoked to get it on the water. And, I've been looking at some other glass blanks. There's a 3-weight glass, 4-piece glass blank that I've contemplated ordering in the future. Because I currently, well, I do have a 3/8 finesse, but I don't have a 3/8 glass rod. And I think that would be a really fun creek rod, like when I go to Brushy or something like that.
Oh, for sure. Dude, or, could you imagine catching a dinner plate size reel on a 3/8 glass?
I mean, the reel that I caught, the few reels that I caught at Delano, they weren't even like the one that you caught when we went to Brushy. Dude, uh-huh. They were like half that size. And I caught them on a 4/8 and they were pulling, man. It was fun. So on a 3/8, I can't even imagine. So especially a 3/8 glass rod. So
right.
I might pull that trigger in the future. We'll see. I just want to get this one finished up and fished. So we'll see how that goes.
Right. That'll be awesome. I can't wait to see it in action. Hopefully you can finally get on your cart.
I really hope so, dude. that's been a whole debacle. I have Rob McConnell's Fly Fishing Houston book, and he's mentioned some areas where you could potentially find carp. And so I might go and explore Houston and see if I can get one out. There's a few places I've gone in Houston where I've seen like grass carp and stuff, mm-hmm. But they were like far and few between. Like this, I went to one place and I saw one the entire time. So I'd like to find a place that holds, you know, a few, so that way I can actually have more opportunities and potentially cast that one, potentially catch one. But I just haven't really explored Houston much. But that's probably the closest carp fishery to me, or probably the closest place that I could go to that has carp. I think there's some in Lake Somerville, but. I know for a fact there are some in Lake Somerville. I have a buddy who's caught them, but I think I just rather go to Houston and try and do it. That way I can go to a brewery and grab a beer afterwards if I get frustrated or something.
Right, dude. There's plenty to do in Houston.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've read through that book and it makes me wish that I was closer to Houston just for, you know, some of the fishing spots on the outskirts.
Man. I'm surprised I haven't explored Houston more. I've the only time I've gone to Houston is to go to Gordy's or Bayou City Anglers. I think mm-hmm. me and my buddy went fishing at Little Creek there two or three times from here. Just that's specifically where we went to go fishing. That was a lot of fun. That Little Creek was a lot of fun. I was surprised at the diversity. Of fish you can catch out of there, man. It was insane. And then that's really it though. So I don't really go to Houston unless like there's something specific that I need to do or something specific that I want to do. And rarely is that like a fishing trip. So I just need to go do it, man. I want to hit up Rob and see if we can go fishing. Especially like during COVID, I'm surprised I didn't go out there more to go fishing. I had a little bit more time. We actually had a lot more time to go and do stuff. I was surprised I didn't take advantage of that. But, well, I mean, we went to the Sam Houston National Forest. That was a lot of fun. That's another really cool little fishery.
It's a place I'd like to go. I've never been there.
If you were, when you come back down in Texas, we'll try and make that happen, man. I think you'd dig it. It's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like you're transported to another place. It doesn't even feel like you're in Texas, really. It's pretty neat, dude. It's almost like you're blue lining. Like in the Smokies or something, but instead of trout, you're catching bass. It's really,
that's
really
awesome.
Yeah, dude, it's really, really cool, man. Awesome little fishery. I think it's really underrated. But yeah, so I think I might, once this is done, if I don't go back to that carp spot that I visited when I went the last time, I'll probably go try and hit up Houston somewhere and see if I can find some carp.
Dude, there's a spot that I know over in the Richmond, Rosenberg area that I wish I knew more about fly fishing back then last time I fished it, but it is loaded with carp and gar. And I don't know if you remember, I took a little video on my GoPro years ago of me catching a little nubby finned channel catfish on a 2/8.
Yes, I do.
And the rod was completely, yeah, it's that retention pond over there. And it's a retention pond right behind, like there's a shopping center and a big housing development. And there, I mean, it's a decent sized body of water. And I mean, there's carp, gar, bass, catfish, all sorts of stuff in there. But the gar were massive in there.
I believe it, man. That little creek that we went to in Houston, the gar were breeding one time. They had like these breeding balls. Like they had like one bigger female surrounded by a bunch of smaller males. It's really, it was crazy. It took me a while to realize what I was looking at, 'cause they were right up on the bank under some grass. But yeah, man, there's so many gar and some pretty decent sized ones. I was really surprised. But that's one of the cool things about urban fishing. It's just unreal. Like the amount of life living in such close proximity to a large city or even in the city, like it's surprising. Like, for example, I mean, College Station, it's not a big city by any means, but there are some like little creeks and stuff running through town. And me and my buddy would go and, you know, just go and fish just to see what's up. I caught the first spotted bass I ever caught was out of a freaking ditch here in town.
Really?
Yeah, dude. And not a little bad one either. I was like, what the hell, man? I didn't even know there were spotted bass in this town. I only ever caught largemouth out of the little creeks, but caught the first spotted bass I ever caught was out of a little creek.
That's crazy.
Little urban creek in College Station. Yeah, man. So, and then in Houston, when we went to that place, like my buddy, he has caught gar, he's caught tilapia, he's caught rios. I've caught some rios there too. I've seen buffalo, smallmouth buffalo. I've seen spotted gar and all that stuff, man. So that's one of the things I think that's really, really neat about urban fishing. You just never know. You just never know what you're going to see, what you could catch. It's pretty crazy.
Dude, I've been binge watching John B's Casting Concrete series. It's been wanting me to go do some urban fishing. Next time I go to Fort Smith, I think Ruth's cousin is going to take me to try to get on some freshwater drum and some smallmouth buffalo. He catches them a lot over there in the Arkansas River.
Yeah.
And he said it's a fast current, and he typically throws minnows out there. So I'm hoping I might be able to throw some full sink on, maybe like an 8-9 weight, and throw some bait fish patterns out there and hopefully get lucky to get on one. But it's a muddy river, so it'll be difficult. But I think it'd be fun.
Buffalo are such weird looking fish, like little aliens, man.
Right.
There's a spillway not too far from where I'm at, and it's loaded with small buffalo and gar. I've gone fish. I haven't been there in a year, but the last time I was there, I tried casting at some buffalo, but dude, I think they're even harder to catch than carp, man. Like from what I've read, to really like have a good chance of catching a buffalo, like you have to get it in their feeding lane. Like rarely will they deviate from that to go chase down a fly like a carp. I've seen videos where someone casts and then maybe it's not right in front of the face, but the carp will like see it and they'll turn for it and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've read, a buffalo will not do that. Like you have to get it in front of its face.
Really?
And so I've read. I don't know how true that is. But based on my limited experience, I can kind of see that, because the ones I have casted at, like they were feeding in a lane. And if I was just outside the lane, there was just no chance, man. So yeah. And then the water was really murky, so I couldn't really see where my fly was landing, even with a black fly. So it was really, really tough. So I've been wanting to go back because I know they're there. I've seen them. I've seen a really big grass carp there too. But yeah, man, you should definitely try it. But my brain's like I'm all over the place. But but while I was fishing, there was a buffalo that came up. It rose. I don't know why it rose, but it rose up to the surface, and I just got a really good look at its face. It had these really big, like jet black eyeballs, and I was like, "What the hell, dude?" And they're actually really pretty. Like their scales have like this, like iridescence to them. I don't even know how to describe it. Like almost like oil, like a little, you know how you
see, it's like a pearlescent color almost.
Yes, perfectly. Yeah. That's exactly what it looked like, man. It was really pretty. I was very surprised, man. I think they're an underrated fish, and I also want to try and catch one of those. And I'm really hoping you can catch one of those. I think, and I heard they pull really good too. So I think you'd be in for a good time if y'all can make it happen.
If I'm not mistaken, I think I casted it at maybe one or a couple of them over on the Lower Colorado last time I was there with y'all.
Probably. I did see a few over there.
Yeah. But same thing. I mean, they just kind of, obviously I'm not the most accurate caster. I don't fish for carp or sight cast very often, but yeah, it was just like almost like they just didn't even care. And they didn't seem to be spooked as much either as the common carp. So I don't know, is their eyesight not as good or like, do you know?
I don't know, but that was my observation too. I did notice that something that I would have done to spook a common carp, I was able to get away with the smallmouth buffalo. I don't know why they're just so much more chill than a common carp. I have no idea. At least that's just like my general unprofessional understanding. Like I just don't know. That's just an observation that I made from very limited experiences. But yeah, I have no idea, man.
What about grass carp? You ever casted a grass carp?
I did. They're pretty spooky too.
Really? I've never caught them, but there are some massive grass carp over at Magic Springs Amusement Park over here in Hot Springs. Dude, I'm talking massive. And it's just like you walk across a bridge and go past this little pond that they have on the side of the park, and you can put a quarter in like the gumball machine and throw the, you know, pellets out there and whatever else. But dude, they're freaking huge. I was like, God, I wish I could fish this.
I forgot where I read it or where I heard it, but there's someone who fishes for grass carp, and they tie a fly that looks like a piece of grass. They say pretty much with a grass carp, you have like a dinner plate size window to get it in front of their face. Uh-huh. And so you have to be pretty accurate. But yeah, like they just use flies that look like a little piece of grass. I think they essentially just take a hook and wrap that thing, or algae. I think they just get a hook and wrap that thing in like green dubbing or something, and like comb out the fibers to make it look like some algae or something like that. I don't know. They didn't make it sound too complicated.
Yeah.
But apparently it's pretty effective. I don't know.
I wonder if you could get like a piece of like tinsel or something and like bend it in half, green tinsel, and just tie it on at the hook eye or something like that.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never tried to tie a fly for grass carp specifically. I've tied carp flies, just none for grass carp specifically. Right.
Hell, I've been so damn, like, I'm not going to say I'm desperate, but I'm almost desperate for freaking common carp in ponds. I just want to tie up a fly that looks like a piece of bread or something. Just toss it out there and see. Because it's so aggravating. It's like, oh, they're coming up and eating all this bread, but I can throw on every freaking fly that I have and they don't want it.
Man, so when I hooked that, the first carp I ever hooked, I hooked it out of a pond, and it was eating bread. I saw it sucking down pieces of bread, but I caught it on a Atlanta bug. I tried to tie a fly that looked like bread out of deer hair, and it came out terrible. And when I went back, I didn't see it. I didn't see any carp. So I never got a chance to really test it. And I don't know how I feel. Like I want one so bad, but I don't know if I want one that bad.
Right. See, I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if you can get some like EP fiber and like make almost like a hollow, almost looking in the water from underneath the water. It might look like a piece of bread floating on top or something like. Yeah. I was thinking of all these different ways because, you know, when you tie a like crab patterns, plantation crab and stuff like that, how you have the saltwater EP fiber and it comes out and it makes the body. Yeah. I wonder if you could do that and maybe put like a small strip of foam or something just to hold it up.
You could probably make your own dubbing brush out of, what is it called? Yeah, I think it's EP fiber. But just like, you know what I'm talking about? Like little strands. I can't remember what it is freaking called. But I've seen guys on YouTube, they'll make their own dubbing brushes, or on Instagram too. They'll make their own dubbing brushes of whatever craft fur, that fiber. What else have I seen them? I've seen them do with bucktail, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of like synthetics too. They'll just use some paper clips, a cutting board, and a drill. And I've actually done this too, and it actually works. My brushes, like, they came up crappy looking, but I was able to tie a fly out of them. So you could probably do that, man. Just get you some like white and brown craft fur or something. Or EP fiber, and just make a little brush and then brush it out, trim it, fold some foam over it to get it to float, and you're probably pretty golden.
It's an idea, man. We could be resourceful sometimes. Like, you remember when I used to tie the woolly buggers out of my dog's fur? I called them the DOG buggers.
Dude, I remember you used to blend your own dubbing out of yarn in those
dog hair brushes.
Yeah. Yep. And you throw in some synthetic just to give it some flash. It was pretty damn impressive, not gonna lie.
Yeah, that was back before I knew about like Jay Stockard and all the online fly material places, and there wasn't really a high selection anywhere near me. And so I was just, you know, you can go buy 1,000 foot of yarn from Walmart for $2.97 and, you know, get some flash, because everybody carries flash, you know, get some flash from a local place and brush them together with dog hair brushes, and then cut it to the length that you want your dubbing to be. And I used that for a while. I made dubbing out of my dog's undercoat. I'd brush him. I mean, I've done all sorts of stuff.
Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
Right, right.
I mean, I think I saw a skunk dead on the side of the road the other day, but it didn't stink. I wonder if I could get that pelt and if it would actually
You mean it
work.
Didn't smell like barbecue?
No, it definitely did not. I wonder if I could use that for anything. I thought
about that with whitetail. You know, there's always a dead whitetail on the side of the road. I'm like, look at that bucktail there.
I have a buddy. He hunts, and he hit me up one day. He was like, "Hey man, I got some extra bucktails. I know you tie flies. You want them?" I was like, "Yeah, man, sure. I'll try them out." So he sent them to me. And the hairs aren't like long enough to tie like streamers, like clousers or anything like that.
Well,
you could like really small ones, but for the size that I like to tie, it's really not the best for that. But I've found that they work really well for wings on like dries or terrestrials. Like I'll use them for wings on my Lano bug sometimes.
I see.
And so those are pretty good.
Yeah, that's one thing is I haven't asked anybody that I know that hunts but I've seen a few on dead on the side of the road. And I'm like, And then I saw a poor Bambi got hit the other day, and I was like, ooh, I was like, I wonder if I could use some of that body hair.
Dude, so there's this tying group. There's a guy, I cannot remember his name off the top of my head. Really, really nice dude. Really great tire too. He would come from time to time. And I can't remember if I gave him some material or a fly tied or something. I gave him something. And in return, he gave me a patch of, I want to say it's moose fur. Moose hair.
Really?
Yeah, that he dyed himself, because he's also big into hunting too. So he apparently, if I'm not mistaken, I think he harvested this moose and then saved the pelt and dyed a couple pieces of it. And that hair is coarse. I haven't tied anything with it yet, just because I don't really know how I want to use it, because it's a very small patch. So I want to be very selective of how I use it. I just haven't come up with anything yet, but I do have a small patch of moose hair.
Would hair that coarse be good for stacking, or would that not be good for stacking?
I imagine I could probably.
But you wouldn't want to waste a whole thing on one fly, right?
Exactly.
The stacking uses so much fur.
I could probably spin some small micro poppers with it, maybe.
Or maybe just for the head of a dungeon or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
Have you ever tied a dungeon?
No, never. Wait, like a sex dungeon?
Yeah, sex dungeon.
I mean, I've tied variations of it. In the flies that I sent you, those flies that have a big deer hair head, that's a variation of a sex dungeon.
I see.
Except for the body, if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember if the sex dungeon has I can't remember what he uses for the body, but I think it has some schlappen for the ribbing or something like that. So for me, I use a complex twist of schlappen and polar chenille, I think.
I see.
So that was the main difference between that, and then I just, you know, whatever I did for the deer hair head. So I have made dungeons. They're fun to tie. I do like, I like tying those.
Dude, every time I hear the word schlappen, you know what I think of?
What?
You ever seen that movie Billy Madison?
Oh man, it's been years, but yeah, I've seen that.
The lunch ladies, I made the sloppy joes extra sloppy for you today. I don't know why that every time I hear slopping, that's what I think.
Dude,
of.
What I want to know is, where do people come up with these names for these flies, dude?
A sex dungeon, right?
Like, there's some really trippy ones, man.
Dude, we could probably have a whole episode on fly dames.
We
could probably throw in a bunch of random things in there, and people probably wouldn't even know if it was or wasn't a fly. That's one thing we do. We could quiz each other. Be like, is this a fly or is it not a fly?
I don't think we can, because Honey Hole does something like that.
They did do that, didn't they, recently?
They do. Is it a fly name or a band or something like that? And they give, like, some crazy names, and you have to decide whether it's a band name or a fly name. It's actually a really cool little segment, man. It's fun.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I like listening to that when they do it. It's pretty hilarious. But yeah, man, some of those fly names, is they're just outlandish, crazy.
It's nuts.
I mean, but
speaking of tying flies and stuff, have you did you see Living Water's recent post about their fly tying nights and stuff like that? What's coming up?
No, I haven't.
Let me see if I could find it real quick on Instagram. Chris Johnson was saying some stuff about what they have coming up. I think they have two fly tying events coming up, one of which is for articulated flies, and I don't remember what the other one was for.
I think I did see that one, but I saw one where you had to pay.
Yes, and both of them are paid, but he was saying that the cost to join the course, you get more than what, like, all of the gear that you get from the course is typically more than what you paid to even get in anyway. So if you wanted to go buy the materials, you'd spend more money.
Yeah.
So, but he's also having, I don't remember when it was, but he was doing a, I think this one might be a free class, but it's a how to photograph your fish.
Oh man, that'd be awesome.
Right. I wish I could go to that one. But yeah, if you go to Living Waters Fly Fishing Instagram, you can see all that stuff for all the listeners out there. But yeah, they got some cool stuff coming up.
Do you know there's a, what's his name? I think it's Backwater Fly Fishing or something like that on Instagram. That guy can take some amazing photos.
Water. I know there's Backwoods.
No, it's a... I don't have my phone near me.
Actually, I think Backwoods is a local Arkansas guy up here. If I'm not mistaken, it's Backwoods. I think his name's Jackson Butt. He takes some really good pictures.
I could be mistaken. I don't know the name off the top of my head, but that guy, he's also a really good fly tire. And the photos that he takes of his flies, I don't know how he does it, but they're beautiful. The compositions, the color, everything. Just really beautiful photos. But he can also take some really, really sick fishing photos. I cannot.
Yeah, the guy that I'm talking about, his name's Jackson Butt, and he's a guide at Kings River, if I'm not mistaken, up here in Arkansas. Yeah.
Isn't that one of the rivers they told us to go fish for, smallies?
Yeah, dude, that's what I wanted to do, that tournament for the, it was the smallmouth shootout.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was, if I'm not mistaken, that was last weekend, this past weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, you think you and I talked about doing that.
Yep.
Man, dude, I need to make it up to Arkansas, bro.
Dude, we got to do some fishing for sure.
I'll bring that rod so you can test cast it.
Oh, hell yeah. You got to make sure you catch a fish on it first, because we can't be having me test casting and landing a fish on it, the first fish on it.
Dude, I feel so bad. That happened to my buddy. I think he was just getting into fly fishing. He bought a TFO NXT combo. Uh-huh. And, we were fishing at a pier on the coast, and I had my fly rod too. He's like, dude, how are you casting on this pier? And I was like, I'm right-handed, so I can just do a regular cast because I'm on the right side of the pier. He's like, since you're left-handed, you might have to do like a backhand cast or like over your shoulder or something. He's like, how do you do that? So I grabbed the rod to show him how to do it.
Uh-huh.
And when I was like bringing the fly in so I can go back for another cast, a freaking trout hit it. And he's like, oh man, I wanted to catch my first fish on my rod. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry, bro. I felt terrible, man.
That sucks.
It does.
Yeah, so make sure you catch a fish on your rod before you bring it up here, because I don't want me to be your karma.
Well, it's karma that needs to happen. I felt like straight crap, man. I felt so bad. I mean, he tore him up that night for sure, but still,
it wasn't the first one.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
That sucks.
Dude, I think it was that night we had an out. I mean, it was stupid, bro. It was like, so my buddy, he used to have this, they used to have a house in Baffin, and that house had a private pier. And so we would have like family nights where we'd all go down there and we would take turns cooking stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards you'd go fish at the pier. And he always told me, he was, yeah, man, if you ever want to come fish the pier and I'm not here, just let me know. No big deal. Like, sweet, dude. So I came into town one day, he was out of town, and I just texted him. I was like, hey man, I'm here in town. Is it cool if I fish at your pier? Is it all right if I bring some fans? He says, yeah, man, I don't care. Just make sure you shut off the lights when you go or before you leave. I was like, all right, cool. So it was like me, let me see, me and three other friends. And that guy, Silver, one of them, the one whose rod I accidentally christened for him. I'm not even joking with you, man. We probably, between the four of us, we probably hooked somewhere around 100 to 150 trout.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that I've never caught on the fly rod. I want to so bad.
It was just stupid. This one girl, she went like, I think it was like, I don't even remember, man. It was like 10 casts back to back to back with fish that she caught.
That's crazy.
It was a stupid night. Like, it was just like, at some point, it wasn't even, I mean, it was still fun, but at some point it was just like, it was, I don't even know, man. It was like expected. You're almost disappointed when you didn't catch a fish on your retreat.
That's crazy.
It was by far like one of the craziest nights of fishing I've ever had. It was just insane, man.
I had a day like that one time. This was conventional fishing over on Arrowhead Lake.
Arrowhead Lake. Where's that at?
North Texas by the Oklahoma border. I want to say, maybe it's not Arrowhead Lake. Let me verify that first. We're tearing up the white bass on some spoons. Yep. Arrowhead Lake. Or is it in Texas? Is it in Oklahoma? North of Allen. No, that's not the right place. Arrowhead Lake, Texas. Lake Arrowhead State Park. Yeah, we tore them up over there. It's over by, let me zoom out a little bit, north of Scotland, south of Wichita Falls. So maybe it's not where I thought it was. Yeah, it's up there by Oklahoma, northeast of Dallas, Fort Worth. Northwest, sorry, just southeast of Wichita Falls.
Never heard of it before.
Yep, tore up the white bass out there one day. I mean, we must have caught. It was me, my brother Marcus, and my brother Jesse's wife's dad, Wayne. You know Wayne.
Yeah, I know Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne took us out on a boat one day out there on Lake Arrowhead, and we just tore up the white bass. It was nuts. And, I mean, they were just schooling up, hitting top water. And so we'd see them, and we'd drive over to them on the boat and then just throw spoons out every cast you're catching them. It was a good time.
I heard when white bass school up real good, you can have some stellar days.
Dude, nuts.
I've never had a day like that with white bass. And I don't know why the specs were just so stacked in there, man, but it was just dumb. Like, I couldn't even believe it. I've never had a day like that since. I probably never will. And that's okay, because that night was just nuts, man. But not sure, else to clarify, it was a mix of conventional and fly fishing. Like, I did bring the fly rod, caught a couple, and then we were just throwing, like, those little spec rigs and stuff like that.
Nice.
And, dude, it was just stupid, man. It was dumb.
Yeah, dude, I want to catch some Spanish mackerel, some speckled trout, some ladyfish. I want to catch all those on the fly.
Specs are fun, dude. I think that is very doable. We can do that whenever you come down.
Right. Hopefully in October, man.
Ladyfish also, I think, can be done in the surf or on the jetty or something. That shouldn't be too difficult, probably.
Throw like a clouser out or something, some type of minnow pattern, some surf candy.
Yeah. Spanish max, you just got to go at the right time of the year.
Right. I don't know if I've ever caught a Spanish mackerel, even on conventional gear.
I don't think I have either, actually, now that I think about it. I do want to go hit the jetties hard one day. Try and catch some bull rads or some sheepies or something.
Dude, some sheepies or a freaking jack.
Yeah, I was just about to say a big jack, dude. That'd be a lot of fun.
Peel and drag, taking you to the backing.
And I've seen some I haven't seen any recently, but I've seen photos in the past of people catching snook off the jetty. And then also catching tarpon. Sometimes a tarpon will roll through there too.
Really? Have you ever seen those spoon flies?
I have, yeah.
I have a couple of them I picked up in Florida.
How are they to cast? I always felt like they'd be kind of a pain to cast.
They're not. They're really? So they're I don't know what these are made with, but I think they're made with some type of carbon fiber mesh or some type of mesh and epoxy. So they're super light. Like they're lighter than even like a Beeching eye clouser. Like they're super light.
Hmm. Interesting.
So
light and then having like the air resistance, I would think it would just cause like, I don't know, man, like some twisting or just a general pain.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if I even casted. Did I? I don't know. I know when I picked it up when I was at the fly shop there at Old Florida Outfitters, and I was just like, it's a lot different than I thought it would be. I don't think I even casted them. Maybe I did, but just feeling them in my hand. But yeah, because they do spin. You'd probably have to put like a swivel on it or something.
Because I know, like, I used to throw spoons every now and again. Like I had always heard spoons work good for redfish. Mm-hmm. When I was conventional fishing, there was only one day. And I don't know why this happened either, but nothing else really seemed to work. And I just had this, there's a lot of grass. That's what it was. There's a lot of grass. So I couldn't throw top water because I kept getting my hooks fouled with the grass. I couldn't throw a traditional, like, I think at that time I was using down south lures a lot. So I couldn't even throw like a regular little swim bait because also I kept getting fouled up in the grass. So I decided to throw a gold spoon because it had a little weed guard and I can run it above the grass, but below the surface. So I did that and the reds just friggin' tore it up. That was the only time in my life that ever successfully used gold spoons. And there was one time, I guess I had developed so much line twist that it somehow got wrapped around my rod tip. Because when I went to cast, it just got stuck, and I ended up throwing my whole rig like 20 feet away. I was like, oh shit! So I had to go over there and grab it. And so I mean that thing, yeah, those things catch a lot of air. They'll spin and they'll twist up your line. So I just never really bothered to throw them fly fishing.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I'd probably have to get some micro swivels or something like that before I start throwing those. But
maybe it's different because they are smaller compared to like a regular traditional spoon.
So. But I would assume just because of the shape that they would spin.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like they're going to spin halfway and then back the other half. You know, it's not. So it would have to spin.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want is a bunch of twist in your line, you know, when you're fly casting.
Yeah.
Might be something I'll have to try out before I actually get out there.
It's coming to Texas, man. We'll go fishing.
Right. I need to. Hopefully soon. Hopefully October.
Dude, did you see Marco's post the other day? He freaking cut up his foot.
Oh, dude, that looks so painful. Gotta love oyster beds.
Dude, I was like, bro, you got to clean that out, man. Those oysters carry all kinds of nasty shit. Vibrio, all that stuff.
Have you talked to him since the trip?
Yeah. I told him when he sent me that photo on Instagram. And I was like, man, what the hell happened? Apparently he had gone fishing with his buddy and they're fishing out of a Ginu and he lost his balance. And I guess he was barefooted. So he fell out of the Ginu and fell right onto an oyster bed and just sliced his foot, man.
Damn it. Dude. Yeah. I saw they're going to chase some reds. You know, if he had any luck.
I don't know. I need to ask him. I hope he did. I imagine, well, I don't know. I think if they did, we would have seen some photos or something.
That's what I was thinking.
I don't know. Hopefully, they I'll have to reach out to them. But yeah, man, just get that stuff cleaned up, man, because those things they're pretty gnarly. They carry all kinds of crap.
Yeah, they do. Ugh, crazy stuff. Yep. So yeah, hopefully I'll be down there come October. I mean, there's those two events that we talked about last podcast that I want to try to make it to. On top of that, I guess, you know, that's a good segue into some other things that we have coming up. So I've reached out to somebody that I know that used to make t-shirts for the football team I played on, and she's going to make us some prototype shirts. And so we could kind of start trying to get some merch made. And so what my plan is to have some fishing shirts made, to have some women's tank tops made, and some hats made. And once we get all that squared away and get everything together, I plan on doing a giveaway to where some people could get entered into a raffle for some free merch, whether it be hats, tank tops, fishing shirts, whatever the case may be. So y'all keep an eye out for that. I plan on hopefully getting that out, you know, here in the coming months, and something that I'm pretty excited about. So we'll, whenever I get the materials in, we'll obviously take some pictures of the gear and do that whole gamut. But hopefully that'll be coming soon.
Heck yeah, man. Should be pretty cool. Looking forward to finally having some merch, dude. We've been talking about it for a while now.
Dude, that's just a common theme with us. We talk about everything. Oh, we're going to do this, and then we just never do it. But I know, we're doing it now, damn it.
We should come up with some more designs for future merch releases. And, dude, maybe we can have, like, an art contest and get a listener art contest, and maybe get the winner's artwork featured on
that's a good idea.
Or hat or shirt or something.
We could definitely do that, because I've been just making everything myself. Using different logo makers and whatnot, and trying to use like stock photos and piece them together, and using text templates, and just trying to get stuff rigged together to get a basic logo, and then removing the background and submitting it to these online websites to have stuff produced. So yeah, it's something that we could definitely put something out competition for our listeners and see if they could be featured on some stickers, clothing. That's a good idea. I never even thought about that.
Dude, I think it'd be pretty fun.
It would, for sure. That it would.
Yes, so I guess we're coming up on an hour now, so we should probably wrap this up. Do you have any closing comments or remarks, Russell?
We just, like we always say, we appreciate y'all listening. We appreciate y'all tuning in, following our Instagram and Facebook. We also appreciate all the other stuff we have coming up. You know, the two events that we mentioned are the Fly Traps 2-year anniversary and also Real Recovery there in New Braunfels, Texas. I did get confirmation on us donating to Real Recovery through Honey Hole. So we do have that coming up. Hopefully we'll be featured by then in the future, kind of promoting some of the stuff that we're doing to help a cause bigger than us. So I'm glad that we're actually going to be a part of that. And hopefully that news will be coming out soon. And we would love for anybody else that can help or make it to the event and do some stuff for a better cause. Real Recovery helps men go on fly fishing retreats that are battling cancer. So it's definitely for a good cause. And that's something that I'm proud that we're going to be able to be a part of. So hopefully all that will be coming out and you'll see us around. And I'm going to try to make it to that event. That one is, I'm hoping we can go earlier in the day and that afternoon, maybe make it down to the coast, but got to work out some of the details on that. But yeah, that's about all I have to cover.
Yeah. It's, we're really, really excited to be able to help out with Real Recovery. Again, if that's something that sounds like you're interested in, go give it a look over and check it out. Also, Honey Hole Hates Trash, that's still going on. If you guys want a chance to win some cool gear while also doing your part in keeping our rivers clean, go check out Honey Hole and see what all you need to do to enter to be able to qualify for said giveaways. And I need to be better about that, putting a trash bag in my bag. And that's going to be my goal too for the next few times that I go fishing. And just try and do my part as well. But yeah, so that's still going on. Give that a look over. Yeah, like Russell said, thank you all for, you know, spending some time with us and giving us a listen. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, just general comments, whether good or bad, feel free to hit us up on our socials and feel free to leave a review anywhere you listen to your podcast, things that you like, things you don't like, things we can do better. Any and all comments, criticisms, everything is welcome. So we thank you. And yeah, till next time.
We will see y'all next time. Thank y'all again.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.